Blog Talk Radio.
Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
All right, 347-637-3942, 347-637-3942 if you want to call in. If you look at my promo on Facebook, you'll see that number there. We welcome guests to call in all the time, and if you have questions for our guests, our special guest today, then feel free to call in and express your opinion, ask questions, whatever you like to do, and however critical you want to be, it's all right. It's all good. So this is what we are here for, to learn and to take something away, a takeaway, as they say in Paris, a takeaway. So welcome to the American Allegiance Show, brought to you by the Patriot Nation Radio Network. That's right. Great shows on this network with El Guapo on Friday, Thursdays and Fridays, and you have other guests or other hosts as well that help me out. I look up to them. James Bostic has a great program. He's got a lot of good guests and has been on fire lately with this show. So make sure you listen, tune in, and you'll find the link to all those programs on my promo page. Or if you go to Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Nation Radio. So today, beautiful day here in Ohio. It's been raining like crazy the last 48 hours, storms everywhere, black clouds, but it's better than the heat we had the week before. It's pretty oppressive. So we welcome this wet weather. My garden loves it too. You know, you got to see the plants. And I'm tired of seeing everything burnt. The grass is all brown here. But things are looking up, and things are falling down the right way. So don't forget, I'd like to thank everybody, all the patriots out there and all the Americans celebrating the 4th of July. What it means to us is very important. Patriotism is all about our country and how we are different than others. And I've been to a lot of other countries. Be happy you live here, just saying that. And we need to come together and become all Americans. We don't need black, white, poor, rich. We just need to be Americans. That's what this is all about. And that's what I love about America. America has come a long way. Yes, we have problems. We have things that happen. But, you know, right now, we're all humans. And we all are subject to what humans do and how humans think. And that's kind of unfortunate, but that's just the way it is. But without any further ado, I hate when people say that. We're going to bring our guest on, and our guest tonight is a brand new author at Brownie Fox, Miss Keisha Jackson, and she lives in Alabama. She's a brand new author, and she's very well educated, and this came in handy for a book. So I want to welcome Keisha to the audience, to the American Allegiance Show.
Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. So tell us about yourself, but before you do that, you wrote a book, this is your first book, about foster care, and it's a children's book, and it's illustrated beautifully as well. You have to see this book. It's incredible. It's just a work of art, the words, the story, and the illustration. So can you tell us about this book?
Sure. It's called Trash, A Foster Care Journey. I wanted to write a book that took foster care from the point of view of a child and really told the story like it happened. You know, I think sometimes we don't give kids the benefit of the doubt for being able to understand more complicated situations and difficult situations. And what I've found in the work that I do is that, you know, if you can sit down with a child and you can have a frank and honest conversation with them, not only are they going to respect you more, but they get a better understanding of what's going on and what the situation is. And so that's what I wanted this book to be, was a frank and honest conversation about what foster care looks like from the point of view of a child who has experienced foster care.
Right. I read this book. Well, I helped put it together, and it is fantastic. You get to see heartbreak, and I'm not going to give the book away, and you see joy, and you see change. I think that was the biggest part of it. People don't realize that foster kids are changing the scenery quite a bit, and some things don't work out. And I do know a lot of parents who have done the foster care thing, but they couldn't handle it. They kept getting rid of the child or moving it on back to the home. So this book is very telling. And tell us about your background, how you know a lot about this, or your perspective.
Well, I always joke and say I think I've always been a social worker. You know my grandmother, so, you know, I grew up helping everybody because that's what she did. And so I kind of accidentally fell into social work. I started doing casework in about 2008 for a Head Start program and decided to go back to school. Got both my bachelor's and my master's in social work. I'm also licensed in the state of Alabama. I used to work for the state as a social worker, as a caseworker. My current position is actually called a social investigator, not necessarily a social worker, but it is still social work. We basically assist a nonprofit law firm who has children involved in the system, so we get to do social work without casework is what I call it. We actually get to help the kids, spend time with the kids, talk to the kids, see what they need and see where they're coming from. So pretty much probably then, I guess we say for the last 10, 15 years, my life has been child welfare.
So you deal with, because of that, you know, what you're doing at a job as a caseworker, do you deal with a lot of foster kids or foster cases?
Primarily I deal with foster care and foster cases. Okay. When I worked for the state of Alabama, my title was foster care social worker. So all of my cases were foster care kids who came into care. You know, we always want it with the goal to reunite, but that's not always a possibility. So, you know, I had cases where I've had kids who came into care and I followed them through the adoption process, or I followed them through reunification with family, or I would follow them through reunification with their parents whenever possible.
Awesome. I know. I understand that would be the ideal thing, but some things don't work out, and it is what it is. So,
yeah.
And a lot of these kids don't have – I can't imagine, because I had a couple of weeks ago, I had a stepdad. I think it's my stepdad or kids who do not have fathers, and the impact that they have. So imagine not having a father or the steady mother. And changing scenery doesn't help either. So, but they're doing the best they can. You have loving parents. It probably makes a huge difference.
Yeah. It's you know, foster care, I always say it's like, you know, the child welfare system is kind of like the dirty little secret. You know, everybody knows it's out there. Nobody really likes it. And nobody wants to talk about the things that are, they never talk about the things that are going good. And they always want to talk about the negative. You know, it doesn't get into the headlines until something bad happens. And that's really sad because there are some really good foster programs out there. There are some really good families out there. But, you know, you only hear about it. It's like, you know, everything else, you don't hear about it until something goes wrong.
Exactly. Totally get it. So the children. So, okay, I got curious questions just coming, popping into my head. So, do they separate children from families when they do parents only take one of what kind of impact does that have on the kids?
Unfortunately, that happens a lot. As far as talking about large sibling sets being separated.
Yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that happens a lot. It's really sad because, you know, when we talk about loss and grief with children, you know, every loss impacts them and they grieve. And when you talk about we're removing from a family, even if we look at the family and say, you know, this family's not a good family for whatever reason that we've decided the kids have to be removed from the home. Then you say you're removed from your home. You leave your home, you leave your bed, you leave your family, then you lose your siblings. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of people that want to be foster parents. I mean, that's just the reality. There's roughly, and this number goes up and down, it fluctuates, 400,000 children in foster care at any given time. There's over 2,000 foster care in the county that I work in. There's over 2,000 kids in foster care right now. And at last count, there were less than 500 foster homes.
Whoa.
So, you know, the math just doesn't add up. You know, a lot of the homes, you can only be licensed for the amount of bed space that you have. And then foster parents are given the opportunity to then choose, you know, we'll only take kids this age. We'll only take kids, you know, that maybe have this issue but not this issue. So when you start, you know, breaking it down and narrowing down and narrowing down to it, you know, the reality is a lot of kids want, or a lot of foster families rather want little kids. And so what happens is older kids, kids with special needs, kids with behavior issues, medically fragile kids, they don't necessarily get placed. That's where the group homes come in, or, you know, sometimes hospitals, mental health facilities, and that ends up splitting up families. And when you throw in the amount of kids that are not getting returned home that end up having their parental rights terminated, you know, we end up with a lot of younger kids who end up getting adopted and a lot of older kids who end up aging out of the system.
So, yeah, aging out of the system.
Yes.
That's something, you know, this is a whole subject that most people don't even think about or give a second thought. We know there's adoption. We know there's families. But, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot more dynamics to it. And just like you say, aging out of the system. So they grow up with no parents. Is that what you're saying? Or just being part of the
family? It just depends on the situation. It's not necessarily no parents. There are situations, a very personal situation. My husband actually aged out of foster care.
Okay.
Now, he was with the same foster mom from 3 weeks to 18, but he was never adopted.
Wow.
So he actually aged out of foster care, which was funny because when we got married, he was 21, and we didn't even realize when he got married, he was still technically in foster care. And so after, we didn't know until after the fact. It was kind of funny. But, yeah, aging out is a big deal. When you talk about things like sex trafficking, human trafficking, petty crimes, homeless youth. A lot of those youth are out of the foster care system, runaway youth. Those are kids that are coming directly out of foster care. And either they've aged out and, you know, you turn 18 in some states, 21 in others. The state of Alabama is 21. And it's your 21st birthday. You're no longer our responsibility. Here's your whatever your check is. Good luck. And just not having the fundamentals and having the facilities and things in place needed to help these kids transition into healthy adulthood. And then we're judging these kids because they've not had, you know, they may have been in and out of group homes, in and out of foster care, in and out of mental health facilities, and they're just not prepared for adulthood. And
whoa,
that's the other side of foster
neat.
Care that nobody talks about.
Right. Right. So they do get a some kind of check from the government? Is that how that works? How do you do that?
I don't want to say it's a check from the government because it's just there's different funding that's available, federal funding, and it's state by state. I know here in Alabama we talk about independent living or ILP funds. So they are allotted a certain amount of money once they age out to kind of, quote, unquote, help them get on their feet. It's not a lot of money. And it really depends on the state. I can only talk for this state. We have actually gotten Alabama's actually doing some things now to help even more, to help these kids transition from 21 to 26. So because of what I do now, I end up interacting a lot with the older kids. I've got several that I'm working with now that have either aged out or about to age out of the system who we're trying to help get housing and jobs. Counseling, just different things that I'm working on with now. Matter of fact, one of them keeps calling in while we're on the phone, so I've texted him and told him I'll call him back in a little bit. He actually ages out on Friday.
Oh.
And I've been working with him since he was about 15.
So,
well, and it's a big, scary world when you think about, you know, you think about all of the safety nets that you had as a teenager and as a young adult, or I think about all the safety nets my kids have, you know, I would never tell my kids you can't come back home. You know, if they're on hard times, you come to mom's house. We're going to help you out. You need something, that's what we're here for. We're talking about kids that, you know, biologically their frontal lobes are not closed at 21, but we're telling them you have to go out and do everything that adult does and do it right. Good luck. And then we're angry and surprised when they can't do it. And that's our own kids. So then you think about a kid that doesn't have that safety net. They may not have had basic living skills. You know, I've got kids that, you know, this particular young man I'm thinking about, he's like, okay, well, they gave me this money to go to the grocery store, but I don't know what to shop to eat for a week.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
So lacking those basic living skills, lacking the ability to know how to go and negotiate getting their lights turned in their first apartment, lacking the ability to budget a bank account, lacking the ability to budget for living, you know, not having job skills, not having interview skills. A lot of these kids don't have high school diplomas. They don't go to college. You know, those are the numbers that are real. So, you know, you have the one side of foster care where you get the cute little kids and they get adopted, and that's great. And then you have the other side of foster care with these kids that don't necessarily have that ending.
Well, that's pretty deep.
Yeah. It takes the other side of the equation is what happens to the original parents? I'm sure there's so many reasons. Because in the book, in your book, Trash, it doesn't explain it, but it's just starting off where the child is in foster care. But in reality, what is the impetus for this to put them in foster care?
I specifically did not choose a removal story and had the parents in because there's so many reasons.
Right.
So, like, the reason for a kid coming into care, I don't want to say it's not as important as the child is in care, and I wanted to focus more on that in the book. So I didn't put a backstory for the parents. Right now, one of the biggest things bringing kids into care, honestly, is drugs. And again, I can only go from the specifics of Alabama. Drugs in this state are really, really bad. Pills, fentanyl, methamphetamines, heroin and cocaine are coming back. Marijuana is always a problem. So when you look at these kids that they're coming into care for drugs and you have parents that are unwilling or unable to deal with the addiction, what happens to these kids? You know, babies that are born early, babies that are born addicted to drugs. Domestic violence is another big reason that kids come into care a lot. Of course, physical abuse, sexual abuse. And then you go down the list from there, neglect and poverty. And honestly, in saying that, neglect and poverty is almost the easiest one to fix because there are infrastructures in place to help those families. You know, maybe the parent was a young parent and doesn't necessarily understand that you can't leave your kids in the house with no air or no lights on, or the house isn't clean or the kids are not clean. Those are things where we have parenting classes and people that will go into the home and sit with the parents and help them clean the houses and teach them. You know, those are the easier fixes, but a lot of times those are the ones where we can have the happy ending of the child being reunified. But anytime a child is removed from a home, the parent is going to be given, when I explain to the kids, I explain it, you know, you get homework when you go to school. So when a parent loses their children to the system, it's not homework, but they're going to be ordered to do certain things based on why their children were removed. So if it's a drug case, they're going to be ordered to do a substance abuse assessment. If that substance abuse assessment says they need to do inpatient or outpatient, they'll have to do those things. They'll have to drug screen. They'll have to be clean for a certain amount of time. There are certain staples as far as stable housing, stable employment, parenting class that are kind of status quo, but then everything else is kind of structured around what that family needs to be reunited. When I did do foster care, what I would tell the parents going in is, A, I'm not going to work harder for your kids to be returned to you than you are. But B, if I see you working, I'm going to do everything I can to help you get your children home. But they are going to be things that the parents have to do.
Wow. Thank you. Keisha, you have a phone. Would you like to answer a question from somebody calling? We have a caller from Oregon calling in.
Sure.
Hello, caller. You got a question for Ms. Keisha Jackson? Looks like they're distracted right now. So it looks like they're buzzsawing some trees or something. I don't know. What do you think? Hold on. Caller, are you there?
I'm doing no magnesium shot taking. Go through me this fast. Oh, Lord.
Caller, can you hear me?
Oh, Lord.
Caller, do you have a question for a guest?
The magnesium citrate is coming out. I'm so full of shit.
Okay, we will skip that call. You never know what's going to happen in this program, things like this.
That was
distracted. Yes, it was. Yes. So we're going to get rid of that caller. Sounds like, you know, I think you mentioned something earlier, so I'm not sure if that was part of it. So we'll have to get back to that. So we'll continue on. So, I've always thought, you know, that about adoption. I know a lot of people do, but people don't actually, I guess it's not appealing to a lot of people because they're not really your children, but you could love them like your own, but people hear so many, only, like you said, the bad side of adoption.
Right.
And it turns into a nightmare or people who take kids into their home. And I know some couples who did that and they absolutely could not handle the kids. And I don't know if the kids test the adopted parents or foster home. So is that something that you deal with? Do the kids push the limits? Is that something normal?
It's very normal, and it's all age kids, and it's the reality of what foster care is. You know, you have to go into foster care as a foster parent, and I'm not a foster parent, so what I'm saying is things that I've talked to other foster parents about. You have to go into an understanding that you're dealing with kids that are more than likely damaged. You're dealing with kids that may have mental health issues. They may have behavioral issues. They're going to definitely have some emotional damage. Even the babies, you know, they think, oh, well, we get this little baby and we got him perfectly. We got him right from the hospital. So no harm, no foul. But you don't know what went into that child's system for the 9 months that they were in utero with their mother. You don't know necessarily all of the family back history of mental health. So even then, you still have to be prepared what may happen to that child when they're 8, when they're 9, when they're 10. So you have to go into it just like you would your own biological child. You have to go in it. To me, it's all in, all out. I'm going to love you regardless, you know. And
right.
These kids are so used to being moved, especially when you start talking about like in the book, when, you know, the young girl's getting moved from placement to placement to placement to placement, you know, the more these children are moved around, every time they do something wrong, they get moved. Every time they say something wrong, they get moved. They begin to say, you know what, there is no stability. So they test limits, you know. So a lot of times I would tell foster parents, you know, for every move, for every situation that this child has been through, it's going to take months to years for them to trust you enough to let their guard down. And even then,
right,
you're still going to, you know, as they go through, you know, you get a young child, when they go through puberty, it's another set of situations. You know, when they get even older and, you know, with social media being the way it is, you know, there's never not a way for them to find their family of origin like it used to be. So you have to have that thought and conversation with your family. It's nothing to go into lightly. It shouldn't be, you know, we used to joke all around because there are people that use it as their own retirement plan, because you do get a little bit of money for foster care. It's not anything to really retire on, but you know, there are people that do it for money, and that's just a sad
right.
truth about, you know, I wish I could say that wasn't the case, But those, unfortunately, are the ones that you see. You don't see all the people out here that are laboring and loved and have raised dozens and dozens of kids and love them into adulthood and still love them and are still a part of their lives and treat them like family. You know, the best thing about even my husband's situation is his foster mom is who my kids call grandma, and they love her to death. And she is the sweetest person on the face of the planet. And she's in our family. You know, she's not our blood family, but she's as close to us as blood. So, you know, just right. If you go into it with the right intentions, if you go into it saying that I want to help this child, I want to love this child, and I'm going to do everything that I can. Now, are there difficult children? Yes, but you have to know your limitations, what you can or cannot handle. And then if you feel like you want to deal with some of the more difficult kids, make sure you're doing they offer classes. There are different types of foster care support services. So you have, you know, that you can get your licensing through. So if you want to work with the children that are more difficult, then I would encourage you to go through a program that specifies in dealing with kids that have more issues so that you get more services. But, you know, my main thing with the book is to think is if you can't be a foster parent, support a foster parent. Everybody can't do it, you know, for health reasons, financial reasons, marital reasons, whatever your reason for not being able to do it. But that doesn't mean that you can't go out and find a foster care group and say, hey, I would love to just, you know, hey, I'll come over and help you with your laundry one day, or can I go grocery shopping for you, or hey, can I get approved to babysit? I can't keep them full time, but, you know, you and your husband need a break. I'll come over and babysit for you one night. It's just one of those things. If you know, it's difficult to take care of the orphans. And, you know, these kids, you know, they have parents, but their parents are not in a position to care for them, so somebody needs to.
Right. So, yeah, you hear about it takes a village, it takes a community sometimes. So I've seen what happens to orphans over in other countries, Africa in particular, where other kids, they treat them like dirt. And they steal their toys and everything. And so the level of care and, you know, things like that all over the world are happening is that they're rejected. Just like in the animal kingdom, they reject animals that look different than them. And this is a huge cultural issue in other countries where they don't have that option that we do. So thank God for the USA that we aren't like that in other countries. But this is a really huge, huge issue. And, you know, when little kids smoke, you know, it's just a different paradigm. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Honestly,
here, I love the idea, and I guess this is because of my heart. I love the idea of international adoption. That's great if that's an option that you want to do. But I need people to understand that there are so many kids in this country that need families, that before you go somewhere else, look here. You know, you can find there are heart galleries in every state. You know, you can look up, you know, you're in Ohio, you can go to the Ohio Heart Gallery, Alabama Heart Gallery. And these are kids whose parental rights have been terminated. So that means their parents are not in the picture anymore. And they have families. And a lot of times these are the kids, like, you know, that we talked about before that are older, that may have a behavior disorder, may have a learning disability, may have a physical disability, may just be older, may not be cute and cuddly anymore, but they still need families. They still need support. They still need love. They still need, you know, care. You know, sometimes you'll see sibling sets on there where the siblings refuse to be adopted if they can't be adopted together. You know, that has happened. But it's just a matter of wanting to take time out of your life to see something outside of that. You know, I can't say that I will ever be in a position to be a foster parent because I have multiple sclerosis. So once I raise the kids that I have, I kind of want to slow down a little bit. But I will always be supportive of the foster care system. I can't imagine doing anything but child welfare until I retire, to be honest, because this is just where my heart is. But, you know, we looked at one of the attorneys at my job one time looked at the amount of kids that were in care versus the amount of churches in the area. And basically, you know, she did this little number thing where she had figured out if every church took on one child that was in care in the county and found one family that was said, you know, we'll take a child, and then every other member of that church just wrapped that family with services. Like I said, you know, offered to do grocery shopping, offered to do sitting, offered just to do anything just to support that family that's taking in that child. There wouldn't be this layer of kids just sitting in group homes, kids just sitting in foster care, kids not having permanency. And, you know, she put the word out there, and I'm not going to give the exact numbers because it's embarrassing, but let's just say it was a very underwhelming number of pastors that returned her contact. And that just, to me, is...
Yes, I agree. That's terrible. Because we have to, you know, it's the young kids, it's our youth, it's the future. You know, this is an opportunity to raise them up. So, yeah, this would be good for, you know, church organizations and other charities. I think church organizations could do really well because it is a big community. Yeah. Even if it's big or small, but they have resources and they can actually make that happen. And some people can't have kids. And there's
right.
a lot of advantages for them to, or they've got, you know, enough and they can spare to raise another
yeah.
child.
Well, and then, like I said, it's just one of those things where if you don't have the heart to do it full time, find somewhere where you can support to get in, you know, versus, you know, donating to this thrift store or that thrift store. Contact your local foster care or your state or your county. Hey, do you guys need clothes? Do you need diapers? Do you need formula? Do you need suitcases? You know, ultimately, the reason the book is called Trash is because one of the biggest pet peeves that I've always had about foster care and removal is these kids being moved from place to place with their items in trash bags. You know, that's the reality of what happens to these kids. You know, what are you telling these kids if everything that belongs to you, we just throw it in a trash bag and we take you in it and we move you. And then we move you again and we throw it back in the bag, you know. They don't have anything that's theirs. They don't have anything finite that they can call their own. And then you start talking about the adults that they interact with. You know, I had a professor in college tell us one time that it takes one adult to impact and make a positive change in a child's life. You know, be a mentor. Be something to these kids because ultimately, you know, these kids are our future. Just like the kids that are in your home or in your family, these kids need to know that they can have a horrible beginning and have a wonderful ending. They can come out of this on the other end and have a good story and know that they are loved and know that they are talented and know that they are special. Because so often these kids don't know.
Right. Because I do have a friend who adopted a Chinese girl. It took him forever to get it. And yeah, I mean, that's a preference and everything, but I agree. I think we should take care of who we have here, and every kid needs the same thing. You know, they want to be loved, and whether they express it or not, they want a family. They want to be adopted, or they want a how else do you start life but without a family and be successful? And you get this, you're learning from these people, and they're teaching you things. And just like you said, once you get 21 and you're out and you time out, then what do? You can't go back to somebody and say, how do I do this? How do I do that? And this is a huge disadvantage for anybody who doesn't have those resources. Because that's a whole other level. You're at 21 years old, in some states 18, and you're on your own. It doesn't sound possible.
And I don't know how you were between 18 and 21, but I know how I was. And if I hadn't had my grandparents,
right.
I wouldn't be where I am today. You know, and that's just being honest. These kids, they don't have anybody where they can just pick up the phone and say, help.
So
you know,
you're right,
I need help.
When I was 18, I joined the military. So I'll tell you what, that will give you direction. If you don't have any, you will have it when you get out of there.
And there are a lot of foster kids that choose that option.
And that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. There are a lot of, I have had a lot of young people come through foster care and get to 18, 19 and opt to join the military. And for a lot of them, it works. I'm not going to say it works for all of them because some of them have too many other issues going on that it's just not the best fit. But for a lot of them, it does work.
Because it's structure, and they tell you, they teach you all that stuff you need to know to be an adult and responsible. So that I kind of clicked in my head. That would make sense. Because I don't know where else you'd go. I don't understand. You could get a job somewhere, but you have no skills. You have no ability. Do you have a future? I mean, they're not going to pay for college or anything. So there's so many things that are missing in your foster child. And I'm just starting to realize that on this interview right now. I never thought about this kind of thing before, but your book is talking about your book and all the illustrations and the situations. The situations are very unique, going from home to home. When I first read that, I thought that this is something else. This is something I never thought of. Because usually you think of foster care, oh, they go to one family and they stay there, but that's not the case. You know, and it's the parents and the people that are bringing them in their homes. They have to meet halfway, and the kids have to meet halfway, and the kids, you know, it's just everybody's different. It's a different situation. It sounds so complicated, and I'm sure there's a lot of problems there, and then you might have parents re-interfering with their kids. I don't know if that's the case or not.
Oh, that happens too. Yeah, it's just, it's one of those, I don't know, doing this as long as I've been doing it and seeing the good, the bad, and the ugly, if you can think it's happened, I probably have seen it. Down to dealing with cases where children have died.
Wow.
Under different kinds of situations.
Or,
you know, having to remove living siblings after a child has been killed. That's what I'm saying. We don't know, you don't know all of the things that these kids have been through. So you have to go in prepared. You know, they have the training classes, but you know, the ongoing training, just really, you know, understand up front from day one what you're getting into, what it's going to be, because it's going to be those days when you want to give up. That's where the support system comes in. That's where prayer comes in. That's where further continued education comes in. And it's just, I have seen kids with so much promise and tried to reach out to them and tried and begged and pleaded and seen the future that they were going to have for themselves if they didn't get out from a certain situation. And, you know, I tell a lot of the older kids I work with now, you know, you can listen to what I'm telling you and you're going to be okay, or you can go this other way and, you know, whatever happens, happens, you know. And so I have, from kids that I work with, kids that, you know, are getting ready to graduate college down to they're married and have families, real estate license. So I have a young man that's going to be in prison for the rest of his life that I worked with really close. So on both sides of it, it's just a matter of looking at what foster care is and what can you do as a human, as a person to help, you know, it's what can I do to help? You know, and it's, again, if you've ever thought about fostering, it's like, oh, maybe I'll do it. You know, read the book and then think about if you want to do it. And then if that's something you want to do, reach out to your local, you know, state child welfare program. Say, there's not a state in this country that doesn't need foster parents.
Right.
And I can bank my life on that one. There is not a state in this country that's saying, oh, we've got plenty of foster parents. We're good. We don't need any more foster parents. We're full. You're not going to find a state like that. You're not going to find a state that doesn't need good social workers, that doesn't need good caseworkers, that doesn't need volunteers, that doesn't need help getting, you know, basic items for some of these kids, that some of these older kids, you know, can you be a mentor? Can you, you know, can you do sitting services? There's so many ways that you can help if you don't want to be a foster parent. There's so many ways you can contribute if you don't want to be a foster parent. You know, look at the things you get at. Maybe you're in a position where you can offer jobs to some of these kids that are aging out of the system, or offer training, or offer, you know, an apprenticeship. You know, maybe you can go in and you can tutor some kids that are going to be, because they moved schools 10 times in 2 years, they don't have the reading fundamentals or the math fundamentals needed to go up in the grade, but they're just passing them because the teachers are like, well, they're not going to be here long enough anyway, and moving on. So the question is, what can I, the question is not what's wrong with this kid, what can I do to help him?
Right. So, yeah, I'm sure you also have special needs kids in foster
yes.
care, which takes a special
mm-hmm.
kind of parent to want to deal
mm-hmm.
with that. And so, yeah, I'm not getting depressed. I'm understanding. I'm learning how this works.
Yeah.
It's fascinating
yeah.
because just like your book. So let's switch to your book. Let's talk about
mm-hmm.
that for a while. So what is the goal of your book? What are you doing? Why did you write this book?
I honestly wrote the book as a teaching tool, but also to get the word out there about foster care. One of my backgrounds is in mental health, and I used to always be frustrated because the books that I felt needed to be written to help kids and have conversations with kids did not really exist. And then when you throw mm-hmm. in things like as far as books that look at it from a cultural aspect, from a representation aspect, they didn't exist. So I wanted a book that would kind of encompass all those things and then could start a conversation. So at the end of the book, there is a conversation starter section for children and for foster parents or any adult, really, where you can sit down and you can read this book and you can have the conversation with your kids. And they don't have to be foster kids, because I have people that I know personally that have bought this book for their children and read them with their children and still ask them those same questions and have reached out to me and said, well, Keisha, I had this conversation with my kid, and, you know, it really made her think about, you know, the kids at her school that she maybe had been making fun of or thought was a weird kid and what she could do differently going forward. So it's really just to, A, get the word out there about what's going on with foster care, so that the conversation can happen of what needs to change, and B, for the children who are already in foster care, allow them maybe to have a voice and an understanding in the home that they're in, so that even if the kids read it, maybe the foster parent can read it and then start realizing some of the things that they might need to change and that they might need to work on. Because we don't think about, again, we're so used to this culture of just telling kids what they are and what they're going to do and not listening to them. And not giving
right.
them a voice and just telling them, you're this, you're that, you're this, you're that, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. And, you know, the terminology is saying that they're a bad kid. Well, if you think about a kid and you think about the stages of grief, one of the stages of grief is anger. So when
right.
you start talking about kids that have had multiple losses in their life, you know, in the book, this child loses a very precious item to her and she
yeah.
becomes angry. And, you know, it's, oh, she's acting out. She can't be here anymore. But why is she acting out? What caused the situation? What could have been done differently? What could the adult have done differently? What could the child have done differently? It's starting that conversation. But it's also making people realize that, wait a minute, this kid that's in my home that's angry all the time, maybe she's not angry. Maybe she's grieving. Maybe I need to help her learn how to grieve properly.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to sit down and have a conversation with her. And that's really the point of it, is to open up for a conversation. A lot of stuff that we don't necessarily think about when we think about our kids.
Right. And in the book, you have a discussion at the very end, which I thought was fantastic. Because you are. I mean, I believe you're working on your PhD. Is that correct?
I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
I don't know that I want to go back to school.
Yeah, same here. But, yeah, but your book is very, very well laid out, and it's not really a short book. It's almost 50 pages, and it's got a lot of situations that in each one. I mean, I love the book because not just the illustrations, the story. It's behind the scenes what the child is thinking and what the child is going through and how they feel for themselves. That hits the name of the book, Trash, because that's what they feel like.
Yeah.
So,
and you know,
in
the title and the basis for the book really came out of, because somebody asked, well, is this a particular foster child? It's not. She is literally a conglomeration of a lot of different children that I have worked with over the years. And it's having her kids say, I'm worthless, I'm no good, nobody wants me, I'm trash. Why am I here? You know, it's, you know, kids that have wanted to commit suicide and have basically told me, what's my point for living? Nobody wants me. You know, and we're not talking about 15, 16, 17-year-old kids trying to commit suicide. I'm talking about 9, 10, 8 year-olds that have tried, that have self-harmed and tried to do different things to themselves and hurting themselves over the years and just said, you know, what's the point? Nobody cares. My family doesn't even want me. You know, so it's that mentality of I'm worthless. You know, these kids, they get, a lot of them get shuffled through the system, and it's the situation of my parents don't want me, on, you know, and the older kids get to the realization, because unfortunately there are cases where the parents just will not do anything in order to try to get their kids back. And I'm not saying that's every parent, because some of these parents, literally it's situational, and they can go through this and come out on the other side and be amazing parents. I've seen it happen. But there are some parents who are just, because of their damage, because of what they've been through, because of how they've been hurt, they don't have the equipment they need to get themselves together to help their children. And then it becomes a cycle. And so, yeah, it's just, that was just the point of the book, is just to put it out there to how these kids think about themselves. And when we're going through this situation and we're not having a conversation, you know, we'll get these kids, we move them from place to place. We don't tell them what's going on. We just pick them up. We move them on to the next one. And they don't really understand what's happening, what's going on. You're not having those conversations with these kids. And I've always been one where I would rather my kids say I talk to them too much than not at all, because my kids are like, oh, God, my mom's going to talk again. Yep, we're going to have a conversation. We're going to talk through this. But now that my kids are older, they're comfortable coming to me and telling me stuff that sometimes, honestly, I don't even want to hear. I'm like, okay, you could have kept that. I did not need to know that about your life. Ew. But thank you for telling me. But it's because from a very young age, I made it a point to tell my kids, you can talk to me because I'm going to talk to you. And that's what we need to start doing, even with these kids in foster care, is having these conversations. If they're old enough to ask an honest question, do you be mature enough to give them an honest answer? You know, as a kid, you know, and I make it a point that I would tell kids, it's like, you know, even in my job, even now, I tell a kid, I'm not going to lie to you. If you ask me a question, I'm going to give you an honest answer. You may not like what I tell you, but I'm going to give you an honest answer. Now, do I just frankly just come out and tell the kid, oh, you're never going home? No. But I will explain to the kid, you know, right now there's stuff that your parent needs to do. And if those things are not done, then you can't go back to that home. You know, and then I'm quick to say it doesn't mean your parent doesn't love you. It doesn't mean your dad doesn't love you. It just means they've got some stuff that they've got to work out on their own. And that's usually how I handle it.
Yeah. So do you think this profession helped you as a parent to your own kids?
Oh, yeah. My kids would probably say no, but I say yeah, because now it make me a very paranoid parent. You can't do this and not be a paranoid parent, because to say that my kids are not the, yeah, you can go to everybody's house and, yeah, you can sleep over every, I'm not that parent. But it made me, I feel like it made me a more understanding parent. It made me a more open parent, because, you know, when I've seen kids, you know, where parents, like biological parents, just say, I can't handle this anymore. Here, go to the state, you deal with it. You know, I always made it a point to let my kids know there's nothing that you can do that's going to make me not love you. And I think that's something that every parent, you know, you may not like the choices that your children made. You may not agree with the choices that your children made, but your kids need to know that no matter what decisions you make, I'm not going to stop loving you.
Question number two.
Because that happens a lot.
Your husband.
Did it help you?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Did your career help you understand your husband and help him?
Yeah, it did. I'm sorry. My dogs heard the door knock and they got
me crazy. Okay. Well, that call we got sounded like somebody was being dragged into a buzzsaw or something. I don't know what that was.
Well, so. I think that was one of those weird random calls.
Yeah.
Program. Hold on, I'm gonna
I think so. That happens. I don't have my producer tonight, so things like this happen. We don't have that backstop. So you know, every time I try to pick up a call and I don't have a producer, it's like, uh-oh, what do I, should I do this? It's like that character with the two buttons to push. Yes or
uh-huh.
No. So you take a chance. So I can see that happening. I can see you can understand things a lot. You're almost a psychologist, so you probably know how to deal with the children.
Yeah, and I always end up with a house full of them.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, I currently am housing six teenagers between the ages of 16 and 13, plus a 20-year-old.
Okay, yeah.
So that's been fun.
Of course. Never a dull moment.
No, it's not. Everybody goes away, though, soon, and then even my youngest will go away to camp, and so I will be childless for a whole week. I'm gonna practice being an empty nester for 7 days and see how I like it.
I bet that. So, okay, I have a question that I didn't think about this till just now. That's why, like, I tell everybody I don't have questions ahead of time because I want to listen to what you're saying. Would foster children benefit, do they benefit from having a pet, something they can love?
They probably would, but because if we go back and we discuss the grief loss situation again, you know, kids are moved a lot. You know,
right.
I was supposed to be on vacation this week, for example, and ended up having to work Monday because a case of kids that I've been trying to locate, the kids got split up and moved all over the state. So I had to try to find them. So in situations like that, you know, or going into a home where, say, the foster parent doesn't want a pet, you know, just, you know, if there's a pet in the home, it's great, but it's still those are those attachment things that we look at. You know, I've gone in homes where the kids, you know, you ask them how the visits are going with mom, and it's not so much that they're worried about going home to see their mom. It's the dog that's at mommy's house that they want to talk about that they can't necessarily have at the foster parent home. So, you know, anybody, I'm a pet person, so, but I'm sure they would. But unfortunately, that's just not a reality of something that could really happen on a large scale.
That's another attachment if they like pets, and then they're gone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. You know, I'm not sad yet. I'm just, you know, like I said, I'm learning. But this is incredibly serious, and that's why I like this book, and I like what it shows people, the reality, in its simple form. It was dialogue, lots of dialogue. So.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think the best compliment or the best review I've had about the book came from another licensed social worker that basically made the comment, this is what really happens in foster care. And it just kind of said, okay, you know, it wasn't just my experience as a social worker. Other social workers have seen and dealt with it, you know, and because of our code of ethics and what we can and cannot talk to, the frustration on the social work side is we don't have a lot of people that we can't just come home and unload.
Right.
And say, I had all of this horrible stuff happen because I can't really talk about it at home. So, you know, that's just kind of a reality of what we do.
So I want to propose something. I would love to see this, like in a social worker class, you know, or academia, this book.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of things in academia that, you know, this kind of stuff is something like that. Say, let's say University of Alabama buys
the books, puts it in their classes. I think that would be, you know, because you become something, but you don't really understand what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've experienced that yourself. But to see the other side of it, this is a perfect example of how things can go. Keeping the kids in mind, from a kid's perspective, this is a perfect example. It opened my eyes up wide, big time, because I had no idea. When I read it, I was like, oh, my goodness. This is heartbreaking. But, you know, it doesn't always end, you know, bad or anything. It's just reality of it, because it's something that most people don't want to do. They're not interested in it, and the child suffers.
Yeah. Well, and the point of the book with this particular book, because, you know this, you know, I've got other books planned, and the bookend for this series that I'm working on is a reunification book where the child actually gets to go home. But in this book, and what we strive for in foster care is the permanency of the child. And the sooner that can happen and the more structured that permanency is, the better. You know, when I talk to little kids a lot, I'll tell them, you know, I give them the example. I say, okay, now if you stand on the hill on 2 feet, are you going to be able to stand and you'll be okay, right? And they're like, yeah, okay. Now take away one of those feet and you got to stand on 1 foot. Are you stable? No. I said, well, that's what we're trying to do right now with your family. Right now your family is on 1 foot and we've got to get them on 2 feet. So one of the things that I've learned in dealing with this is trying to find different analogies and different ways to explain things to kids on their level. And that's just one that really we look at that permanency. Or, you know, I'll explain to them, like, if you draw something with a permanent marker, it's not ever going to go away, right? Yeah, okay, well, that's what we need for you. We need you to have permanency. You need to know every day where your bed is at and where you're going to sleep at and where you're going to eat dinner at and who's going to pick you up from school and who's going to take care of you if you're sick. We don't want you to have to keep moving around. We want you to be somewhere where you know where all those things are going to happen. You know, and in this book, the permanency just doesn't necessarily come from the reunification of a family, but the child in the end does get permanency. And at the end of the day, that's the best thing that can happen for a child. You know, the insecurities of not knowing where your next meal is coming from, not knowing where you're going to lay your head at night, those are realities for a lot of these kids. A lot of these kids live in war zones. They live in, you know, situations where there's not just one form. You know, when you talk about the drugs leads to other things. It leads a lot of times to domestic violence. It leads a lot of times to physical abuse. It leads a lot of times, unfortunately, to sexual abuse. So these kids have done what, you know, they've gone through, you know, in maybe lived 8 to 10 years of their life in basically a domestic war zone. And so you take them out of that, and, you're an ex-military, and you talk about the military and PTSD. A lot of these kids have PTSD.
Right.
They get misdiagnosed with ADHD. They get misdiagnosed with depression and anxiety. And the reality is they have a flight or fight reaction, and they have PTSD. So, you know, it's looking at those things and seeing, again, you know, where you can help. What's the reality of what you can and cannot do for this child? What are you willing to sacrifice as a person? And, you know, like, again, you know, I wouldn't tell anybody just to be a foster parent. It has to be in your heart. But if you can't be a foster parent, you can support one. I think I'm going to put that
on
a T-shirt.
Okay. So, yeah, I think this would be great for people in your profession. This book, I think, would be great to distribute this. And to give it to the parents, maybe, or the adoptive parents or the foster parents. I think that'd be awesome.
The cool thing about it is I did a reading and a teaching last week with Alabama Baptist Children's Home here in Birmingham, and got to talk to a group of new foster parents. And I went to graduate school with the director. And, you know, she actually got some for her therapist to use in therapy with the kids that are in their program.
Okay,
Been asked to, and once I can figure out how to get it to them, to get in contact with the alumni library at Stillman College. For local libraries, I've just donated the book because there'll be kids that'll never be able to purchase this book, and I just want it to be available in some format. So, local libraries, I've donated it to here in Alabaster where I live. I donated a copy of the book, and subsequently they invited me to come and do a a teaching on foster care and foster parents and discuss, you know, the situation here in Alabama and also have a signing there. I have the same thing that's going to be happening in Marion, Ohio at the end of August. I think the coolest thing is that I have a pretty big deal signing. The Birmingham Bar Association is actually sponsoring a signing and a continuing education credit training in September, where I'll get to go in and talk to attorneys that deal with foster kids from the point of a social worker. So I got a couple of pretty cool things coming up. And like I said, if it gets the word out about foster care and gets some people to think about it a little bit differently than they have in the past, then, you know, my goal with this book has been achieved.
Awesome. Yeah, I'd like to have the dates for your Marion trip. That would be, we could meet you there, actually.
It's going to be the last weekend in August. I don't know the exact, I have a friend who does PR work, and she's working on that. She actually has already arranged for a social worker to come in and offer some tip training and stuff during the book signing and be there with me. So we're working on that one now. I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. I had another question. I can't remember what it was, but I think according to your plans, now that you're talking about, you know, what you're going to do, what else do you have planned? What do you have for beyond that, beyond August? What do you want to do?
Beyond August, I want to keep pushing this book. Like I mentioned briefly, this is book one in a series of six. Book two, you guys will probably have it in about 2 weeks. I am about three questions away from being done. Is about Twice Exceptional Kids. So the point of the series, again, is to have teaching tools that can be used to deal with kids, hopefully in schools, ultimately, you know, for this series to be used in schools, to be used in therapeutic settings, you know, to be used in homes, even to just have these conversation things for things that affect our kids every day. So the second book is kind of autobiographical to my family a little bit. It's about Twice Exceptional Kids. So Twice Exceptional, or 2E kids, as I call them, I raised three of them, are those kids that are equally gifted and have either a behavior or a learning disability. To put it in perspective, in layman's terms, it's those kids that go to school and the teacher will send a note home saying, Bobby's really, really smart, but he doesn't apply himself, or he won't sit down, or he can't focus. And then you've got these kids with, you know, ADHD or dyslexia, or both, of which I have one of each. I have one with ADHD, I have one with dyslexia, and I have one with both. You know, and they have these high IQs on the one end, but they struggle in school because of the, you know, the learning disabilities. And it's, you know, this book is near and dear to my heart. It references a time when my middle son, who, if there was a picture for the word for the terminology of ADHD, his picture at age 8 would be right there by that terminology. You know, it goes along with, a summer that he spent with my grandfather, and how those lessons that he learned from my grandfather that summer, he took, he's an adult now, and he still does those things that he learned from his grandpa. Also currently working on a kinship care book, which is another side of child welfare that talks about relatives, most specifically grandparents raising their grandchildren. There will be a book specifically on grief. There will be a book specifically on anger management. And then, as I said, the last book in this series will deal with child removal from home, but ultimately being placed back at home with her family. I'm kind of playing around with that last one right now because I want to make sure I get it right.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of what I've got in the works right now. When I'm not working, I'm writing.
Right. I know the feeling. So one of the things that just kind of hit me in the head just now, I have a friend who after high school, went to a local college, Southern Ohio, and she failed out. But she she went to Mount Holyoke in Massachusetts, wherever it was, and aced it because there was no challenge. Sometimes these things, the people don't have a challenge. They're smarter than what the curriculum is or what's given to them at your lower colleges, but they excel when they have challenges facing them. It's incredible how that works. I couldn't even get into that kind of college she got into, but the regular public college, she failed. I think that's unique. So I don't know if your children are in that situation or not, but it's a strange thing.
Well, it's that conversation of you can't put a round peg in a square hole, or a square hole in a round peg, or however you say it.
Yeah.
You know, the title of the second book is Fish Don't Climb Trees. You know, we have a school system right now that basically wants kids to sit down, be quiet, pass a test, and not think. And that's not conducive to kids with learning disabilities or attention behaviors, because they don't, their brains don't think like that.
Right.
My oldest son is highly dyslexic. But his nonverbal, and the way that we actually found out his dyslexia was because of his gifted status. He was in gifted classes and could not read, and we weren't even realize that he couldn't read because he was so good at masking it. He'd been masking it for years. And he finally just got that one teacher that was like, no, something's not right with this kid. But to put it on a scale, his nonverbal IQ is 142.
Wow.
But his verbal IQ was 99. So he is my kid that he can't read the instructions, but all you have to do is show him how to do something one time.
Right.
And he can do it. I mean, he tried college for culinary school, loved the cooking classes, hated the English class, opted to join the military. Went into the Guard as a mechanic about a year ago, and he is doing wonderful things. Still wanting to cook, trying to get back in the kitchen, doing some mechanic work, and he's like, Mom, I just have to work with my hands. He's like, as long as I can work with my hands, I'm fine. But, you know, if I had been that parent that had pushed him, you know, to be something that he's not, I don't think he would be as stable as he is now.
What guard unit did he join?
He's in the Army Guard.
Okay. All right, gotcha.
Yeah, he's in the Army.
That's good.
That's basically because of his ASVAB score, to be honest. He wanted to do something more, but, again, when we travel back to dyslexia, passing any standardized test is not fun. And his writing English scores that were on that test were not great, but the ones for, like, the mechanic and the electrical were, like, off the charts. And they were like, we got to get this kid around the machine. And so he's doing so well that he's actually waiting. They're waiting for the orders to come up for him to go learn how to fix some kind of diesel crane. I don't know. Some kind of big crane thing, because he's short and he's got small hands, so they figure he can get up and down in this crane easier than a bigger person. So he's getting ready to go do some specialized training in that. But, and, you know, the kid that had the severe ADHD that we didn't, you know, I remember somebody telling me at one point that he was just going to be so bad and in so much trouble, is my middle child, who's 20. And he just became the first All-American for his college in the history of the program in wrestling. And he still struggles in school because he opts not to do medicine, but he does enough to progress. He's never going to be a deanless student, but he's doing enough to progress. And he actually wants to do education and more specifically coaching and physical education. And he's well on his way to graduating college. So,
right.
I mean, it's what you put into him.
Yes. Your son is a mechanic. I'll tell you what, a good mechanic is worth his weight in gold. I'm just saying that. I mean, he's very well respected. If you got those kind of skills.
Well, he's trained on diesel. So, I mean, again, you know, he's not ever going to not be able to get a job. He knows how to do diesel work.
Right.
So, yeah, he does well. But, definitely, like I said, you know, a lot of my books are personal experience, stuff that I've done in my line of work, stuff that I've done. I think kids have always liked me more than I like them, and now I just have realized that I'm just a kid person. So just in different experiences and working with kids, dealing with stuff out of my own childhood. But, you know, like I said, if these books can help other people learn how to communicate with kids, then my goal has been achieved, because that's really what my goal is. It's for people to be able to have conversations with children.
Great. So I need to ask you, what's it like being an author?
It's so cool. It's something I always wanted to do. If somebody, you know, they have that perfect question, you say, in a perfect world in 10 years, if you could be doing whatever you want to do, in a perfect world in 10 years, if I could be doing whatever I want to do, I would 100% just write. I love casework, don't get me wrong, but 15 years in the field of driving, I have worn down so many cars, and not to mention getting older. Being a little bit more settled and being able to work on this side of it, maybe going into academia. I have started teaching college, and I really enjoy that. So I'm thinking that might be my next leg of life, is teaching and writing.
What's it like signing autographs? Isn't that cool?
It's cool, but it makes me very grateful that, you know, I have the worst signature in the world from having to sign papers for work. So it's like you get a first initial, a second initial, and some zigzags. But, you know, I don't ever have to worry about trying somebody copying my signature. But it's cool. When I did the book signing last week at Alabama Baptist Children's Home, I actually got to sign and, you know, and dedicate books to some specific foster kids. And that was so cool. I was like, that's this kid's book who's in foster care. This is this kid who's saying, okay, this is kind of my story. That was probably the coolest thing I've done. Getting to interact with the foster kids was cool.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, say that again.
You're not the only person. You're not the only person that has the worst signature. I know people that have been writing for years and their signatures look terrible. So I feel encouraged. So it's all right.
They're definitely getting an original signature.
Yes. So you're on Amazon, and just let people know where you can find the book, or they can find the book, or on the website or Amazon.
Well, you can get it on Amazon. If you want an autographed copy, or you're trying to get a copy directly for like a specific person, I've had people say, hey, I know somebody who's got foster kids. I'd love to get a book for this kid or that kid. If you follow me on Instagram, it is KeishaJackson_author on Instagram. So if you follow me on Instagram and you send me a private message, I will sign and dedicate a book and ship it out. You just pay shipping. So that's been a cool thing. I've got books that I've had to send as far away as New York, and some different places where people have asked me to ship some books. So that's been pretty cool. It's been cool. Like the support, it's been crazy. People I've known from college for years are like, hey, I just got this copy of your book and it's great.
Yeah.
And, you know, people from graduate school, other social workers that I've interacted with that are going back to like their, you know, program or director and saying, hey, there's this book. So all that's been really fun. But yeah, like I said, definitely follow me on KeishaJackson_author. Anything that I've got up and coming is going to be on there. I will tell you, I am a driver. I love to get in my car. So if you are part of a foster program or foster care program, or you're part of a church that wants to know more how you can help, I have wheels. I will travel. I love to drive. I will get in my car in a minute and drive anywhere. I'm not big on getting in the air, but I will drive anyway.
So you're from Ohio. Now you live in Alabama.
I am actually from Ohio. Yeah, and I live in Alabama. Yeah.
You're smarter than I am because the weather's better down there. Sometimes, not all the time.
I don't know. It was like heat index of like 100 and something today. It was frying egg on the concrete hot today.
I can take that. I'm good. Also, you can look at her book and on browniefoxpublishing.com.
Right.
And on our Brownie Fox Publishing Facebook page. So we like to promo things and put things out there. And I understand you also have an ebook of the same thing that you can get on Amazon.
Yeah. You can get it on a Kindle on Amazon as well, yeah, which is pretty cool. I think I'm going to get it on Kindle just so I can have my book on my Kindle. I thought that was pretty cool. And, yeah, quick shout-out to the illustrator of the book, too. He was amazing.
Yes.
I'm just going to put him on retainer for five more. I don't know what else he's got planned, but he's going to be busy because he's amazing. And the feedback that I've gotten from so many people about the illustrations, he literally brought my words to life. I couldn't ask for a better situation. It just worked out amazingly.
Yes, Mr. Foster is a gifted person in this world. Incredible, incredible artwork. And it's just so natural, though. And he makes people, there's a person in that book that I actually know, and I could tell who she was when I saw.
You talking about my aunt?
Yes.
Yeah, so again, you know, it's the thing with it being my books and my vision, and I can bring in and dedicate and give, quote-unquote, give people their flowers while they're due. So I just wanted that to be a special way to let my aunt know how much she even influenced my life growing up. She was like a surrogate mom to me. Yeah.
That's an honor that you did that, and I'm very proud of you and what you're doing, and they're fighting a good fight, and you're bringing awareness, and I appreciate it. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we end this program?
No, just in all of the books I sign, I always say, be the change that you want to see in the world. And I'm telling you, I think I'm literally about to trademark that saying, if you can't be a foster parent, support a foster parent. I'm about to put that on a T-shirt and wear it everywhere I go, because that's really what I feel like. Everybody's not called to be a foster parent, but that doesn't mean you can't help. These kids always, I mean, school's coming up. They need school supplies. You know, reach out to your local foster care program and ask, can you donate school supplies? They will say yes, they need them. These kids need school supplies. You know, we're talking about kids that, starting school at a disadvantage. They don't have all the school supplies or any school supplies or school uniforms or a new pair of shoes. You know, a lot of states have tax-free holidays coming up. You know, just double up. Get something for you, something for somebody else. Clothing is always big. You know, you may have five or six pieces of luggage that you're never going to use in your closet. Reach out to a local group home, foster home. See if you can donate that stuff. You know, if you have a foster family in your church, you know, literally, offer to send them a meal one night, offer to cook them a meal one night, offer to babysit one night, offer to just, hey, I'm going to come over and help you fold one of these 52 loads of clothes that you're trying to do. You would not believe how, you know, something that's so little to you will impact somebody else so much. You know, Christmas comes up. You know, this last year, it was heartbreaking here. They did not have enough people to do the angel tree for foster kids. So a lot of kids ended up either, they did not have gifts, they just gave them a gift card. And some of them never got the gift card, so some kids had nothing at Christmas time. So, you know, if nothing else, adopt a kid at Christmas. They're just going to foster care. So it's just anything you can do, because at the end of the day, these are the children that are one day going to be the adults that have to take over this earth. And don't know how you stepping in and helping them is going to just, you know, that one act of kindness can change everything. It doesn't take a lot.
Absolutely. Well, Keisha, thank you so much for coming out on this program and explaining your book and pushing what you know to us, the knowledge, and it's been incredible. I appreciate you coming on and hope to have you on in the future with future books or our progress that you make with this book. It's out right now. So I know these books take time and they take a lot of effort, and I appreciate you putting effort on the other end as you know, you can, and you're taking advantage. So we'll talk about that some other time, but yeah, just keep doing what you're doing, and I think you're going to make a huge impact. And I was so happy that your book was number 4 on Amazon when it came out. That was pretty awesome. So you're doing the right thing, and you're doing the right with the right people and the right resources, and you're putting it together beautifully. So, yeah, let us know when you're going to be in Ohio. So we'd like to come and visit you. And
definitely. When I get the firm dates, I will definitely have them post out. You know, I'll get with you and your wife privately, but
sure.
For everybody else, as soon as I have all of the dates of what's coming up, I've got some more I've got to add. Because I think I now have two signings in August as well here in Alabama, one in Alabama, one in Ohio, and another one in Alabama in September, and one in Alabama in October. It's a book fair. But as soon as I get the finalized dates, I'll be adding them to my Instagram page.
Okay, great. So I appreciate you coming on. You have a great evening, and thank you so much.
Too.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
And it's truly a service.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I appreciate
it. You're so welcome. Thank you. Thanks a lot. You're a great guest. Enjoyed having you. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
So that was Keisha Jackson. She is incredibly gifted in writing books. She just knocks it out of the park. So if you look at my Facebook page, you'll see the link to her book. You know, buy the book, you'll love it. It's fantastic. The artwork is worth as much as the book is. It's just incredible talent was put into this. This is something we put together for Granny Fox Publishing, and this is totally incredible what this looks like and how it feels and what it reads and the depth of it. It's not just a little book. It's pretty deep. It goes pretty deep. Got probably 50 pages. Like I said, it's incredible. Just looking at the cover is incredible. So just follow that link and you'll learn a lot. It's very sobering, very eye-opening in the situations and everything, but it's something most people don't see. You never see the ugly side of making the sausage of a lot of things. And this is one of those events where it makes you want to think. It's like, how is this happening? And we were approached with this book through the normal methods, brownyfoxpublishing.com or brownyfoxpublishing@gmail.com. That's where you can reach us if you have a book to submit. And this is actually the first of two books about foster care that we are considering right now because it's such a great need. We were first approached with this book, and it was kind of like, wow, this is really deep. This is something we need, something out there for people to see this and understand how this works and how it's coming along. So we're very happy, very proud to have published her. And now she's a published author, and she's spreading her book everywhere. That's what you're supposed to do, right? You're supposed to take it on the road, the other half. So we give you the football, and you run with it. And we help along the way. And that's how that works. Well, that's it for this episode. Next week, we're going to have Lauren from Ohio off of the RBN network. She's going to talk about a lot of things. Among other things, you know, freedom, rights, the Constitution, citizenship. And she is a naturopathic doctor. She's been to medical school and everything, and she used to sell pharmaceuticals, and I think this is the show where she's going to say, hey, be careful with them. She knows what's in them. She knows how things are made, analyzed, and put on the market. So this should be very interesting since I do my own medical hacking myself. We had a conversation today about that. So it's going to be a great show. We're going to be on the same page. On the same network, Patriot Nation Radio, the American Legion Show. Have a good night, everyone. We're up. Good night.